Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished professional from the world of academia, from Singapore, Dr. Vinika Rao. Vinika, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh.
Dr. Rao is an executive director of INSEAD, Africa Initiative, and the Hoffman Institute for Business and Society Asia. She sits on several boards and advisory boards. So before we talk about our topic today, which is going to be diversity, equity, and inclusion, tell me about your own amazing journey in brief.
Thank you again for having me, Ashutosh. It really is a pleasure to be here talking to you and with your listeners. I did a TEDx talk some years back when I made the switch from a corporate career to the field of higher education. You understand how these switches go. You've made some in your own life. And at that time, this talk was, they asked me to speak about Dare to Dream. And I think that exemplifies really how my professional and personal journey has unfolded. So I'm an army brat. I'm the proud daughter of an Indian army officer. So I moved many locations for my initial formative schooling, which I think was really helpful. And then, of course, I came back and did an undergraduate degree at Lady Sri Ram in Delhi and then an MBA with the IIM in Bangalore. I started my career with Citibank in India. It was my dream job at that time. And I almost could visualize the watch I was going to get when I retired from the bank because I was so sure that I'd sort of stay there forever. But of course, that's not how things unfolded. You know, life intervened. There were both challenges and opportunities. And so I moved functions, industries, and countries. And long story short, in my last corporate job, I was managing director for an Indonesian conglomerate before making a serendipitous switch to education.
Wonderful.
And I say serendipity because it happened by accident. I used to go in as a guest speaker in various business schools, and one thing led to another. And anyway, that's how I found my calling. And that's what I've been doing in my second career innings for the last almost a decade and a half.
Oh, wonderful.
And now, as you mentioned in your gracious introduction, I wear both an executive and a faculty hat. I run two centers for research at INSEAD. And I teach in the areas of diversity, equity, and inclusion, intergenerational influences on the future of work, allyship. And what I'm most interested in now is the cusp between inclusion and sustainability, how you cannot have sustainable growth without taking everyone with you.
Very well said.
And I live in Singapore with my husband. He works in private equity. We have a lovely daughter who works in London. And we have one very badly behaved little dog who's taking full advantage of our being empty nesters these
Wonderful.
days.
Wonderful. Well, so you and I have something in common, which is my father was also in the army. So I'm a much older army brat, if I can say that. So Vinika, let's talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. What motivated you to specialize in DEI and sustainability initiatives?
Ashutosh, over the years, when I would speak at events or train organizations, people would sort of automatically assume that I'm a career academic, I must have a PhD, and they would address me as Dr. Rao. And after correcting this mistake several times, I finally decided to make an honest woman of myself and go ahead and do a doctorate. And that's when I thought very carefully about what I wanted to spend this next part of my work life doing and for the foreseeable future. And I consciously made a move away from the strategy and finance areas that had sort of dominated my corporate career till then into the very exciting and impactful areas of DEI and ESG, where I felt I would be able to make a more active contribution that could go beyond the interests of any one organization and hopefully encourage the intentional achievement of profit with purpose with a wider community that I could now influence. And so that's how I ended up doing my thesis in leadership diversity and allyship. And I now have the pleasure of working in these areas, exploring the impact of inclusion on sustainable growth. Because I do believe that, business leaders like you have the responsibility to look beyond the business case, sort of take a step ahead of doing good because it's good for business to doing good because it is the right thing to do.
Right.
To be effective stewards of the resources that we control and the communities that we operate within. And I think that's how, I'm sure your young listeners will agree, that's how we're going to save our planet and our people.
Very well said. And how do you see the concept and role of DEI evolving in the next few years?
So actually, the concept of DEI has evolved considerably in the years, even since the acronym, first became popular. In fact, right now, it's under serious review. There were various newspaper headlines you might have seen at the beginning of this year proclaiming that 2024 will be the watershed year for DEI, especially in the US, from which ripple effects often spread across national boundaries. You would have seen Elon Musk infamously announcing that DEI must DIE, and people listen when famous people speak. In June of last year, the US Supreme Court focused on affirmative action in higher education, igniting some opposition to diversity and inclusion measures that had been taken. Several bills targeting DEI initiatives at public colleges are pending across the US even now, and various companies received public shareholder letters claiming that some of the diversity programs constituted illegal discrimination and perhaps even a breach of the director's duties to investors.
Right.
And so in many cases, and quite a few cases early last year, big companies started to back away from their efforts at promoting DEI, even while there's so much work still to be done to bring about this balance and to create a safe working environment for all. So there's lots of conflicting views out there. DEI is definitely under the microscope right now. And I think this will continue in the foreseeable future. But quite honestly, no battle worth fighting is going to be an easy one.
Absolutely.
And so I'm optimistic that pressure from multiple stakeholders like employees, customers, investors, and regulators will continue to move the needle.
Well said. And Vinika, what are some common challenges companies face in implementing DEI strategies?
So I can actually speak from some research that we were asked to do in the Asia Pacific area a few years ago. And it was exactly on this, what are some of the challenges that we continue to have? Why is the pace of change so slow in terms of implementing effective DEI practices? And based on our findings at that point, I developed what we called an SAD framework. We're a business school. We love our acronyms. And I thought it was apposite to say SAD, SAD framework, to explain the sad state of affairs when it came to the implementation of DEI practices. Now, SAD referred to the lack of three things: S, specificity; A, accountability; and D, for disclosure. So the lack of specificity was about, which specific needs are being addressed with all the measures that are being implemented. Who has decided that these are priority areas? And are these areas still relevant given the evolution of DEI that we were talking about? Or are we just replacing old baggage with new one?
Right.
The lack of accountability is the idea that if heads don't roll when DEI targets are not met, then the targets are largely ineffective. It doesn't have to be, the much dreaded Q word of quotas, but, firm and effective target setting is very important. And finally, the lack of disclosure in terms of, aspects like the true DEI statistics, whether it's something to do with wage gaps, for instance, or even the measures that are being taken to create a pipeline for senior talent. In my work, I often talk to companies that will say that, we're really trying very hard to have a more balanced, say, a gender balanced board, but it's not happening. We just don't find the kind of people we want. And that's where, again, these statistics become important. Because often, as I say, if you're going to keep on looking at the same profiles of people, then it's not going to happen. But if you're making an active effort to look, then yes, those changes can come about. So that was the SAD aspect. Another challenge, I think, that's that became quite obvious during the pandemic was the idea that, DEI is often considered as something that's a good to have when everything's going well, but it can be ignored for, say, the what might be called in some cases the true business requirements when a crisis comes about. And then that's a big problem. DEI is not the kind of thing that you can sort of take when you want it and sort of leave it by the wayside when other more important things happen, because the fact is we operate in a very tumultuous business environment and there will be other crises and we can't make those changes.
Well said. My next question is, and I've often spoken to a lot of women leaders sitting on, women board members. And I've said, while inclusion is happening because you are on a board, how much of a voice do you have on the board? And I've sat on several boards, continue to sit where a lot of women, but I still think that the old boys club continues to function. I wanted to ask you, what are some misconceptions about DEI that you often encounter?
A very important question, and one that I've given a lot of thought to. I think the most basic misconception that I continue to see is the assumption that demographic diversity, based on the more obvious surface level aspects, you know, that form our statistics, like gender, race, age, etc., is enough. And therefore, ignoring the other deeper, less visible elements, cognitive diversity, you know, dealing with aspects like personality, values, thinking styles, education, experience, and you know how people carry out their intellectual activities, which has a direct bearing on their performance in the organization, for instance, how they solve problems, etc. So if we ignore the cognitive diversity aspect, then we're not doing enough in terms of creating true diversity, whether it's you know, on boards or other parts of organizations. Another important misconception is that diversity alone is enough. Now, you mentioned inclusion, and that's absolutely the right word to be using in this context, because we know that diversity on its own, and if not properly implemented, can even have a negative impact on performance in some cases, right? We've had research from colleagues at INSEAD and Harvard who've shown this. So inclusion is key. You know, I often say diversity without inclusion is like French fries without the salt. You're missing the crucial element that makes it work. So creating a safe space and a sense of belonging is key. And again, we have good research out there to show us this. The third misconception that I'd like to mention here is, again, based on my own experience in working with C-suite executives and board members, you know, an environment that you're comfortable with, so you'll understand what I'm talking about. And this is a misconception that a lot of business leaders have, where actually they think, or we think, that we are more inclusive than we really are.
Absolutely.
You know, and people will tell me, oh, you know, this is something that's very close to my heart. And I'm sure you'll, you know, when you talk to my team, this is what they'll support, that I'm a very inclusive business leader. I really work hard at it. And then I'll do a simple intervention to test what their teams actually think. And leaders are often shocked by what they hear in terms of how their own teams rate them on inclusivity. So this is the continuing challenge of biases, even by the most well-intentioned individuals. You know, these are biases where perpetrators are unconscious about them. And so we still don't know them. And they become a critical problem when leaders have a lack of awareness and humility about them. Having said which, fortunately, certainly I might be preaching to the choir. If they're reaching out to me, then these are people who are very, you know, keen to make changes happen. But in the most part, as soon as they become aware, people are really willing to sort of say, okay, so then what's it going to take to make that change?
Very interesting. And your response gives me a segue to my next question, which is, how does gender diversity in leadership impact organizational performance? And I'll share my own experience. You know, every time I worked with women leaders or in my retail days with women people, you know, I always said work ethics in women was much, much better. And I've said this many times in open. I'd love to get your perspective.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. But as I did mention, you know, for the other elements of diversity, when inclusion and belonging become part of the equation, then we see a positive impact on innovation, on creativity and productivity. Right. And certainly this applies to gender, as with other elements of DEI. Positive impact kicks in on performance and the bottom line with gender diversity, equity and inclusion. And there's a lot of research I can share by academic scholars as well as practitioners. You know, consulting firms, for instance, will show you statistics on this, establishing that business case for diversity and inclusion. So absolutely. And you mentioned specifically leadership. And I think that's very important because, you know, we do know that there is the leaky pipeline. You know, women tend to fall off of corporate ladders when they're at their most important, actually, in terms of having, you know, the experience and all the training that's required to be most effective. But just given that often senior positions come about at a time when family formation leads to its own challenges, you know, sometimes voluntarily, a lot of women then might drop off the corporate ladder if they are not given the sort of other factors that will, you know, prevent those challenges from becoming insurmountable.
Right. Very well said. Can you also talk about the intersectionality of diversity and its implications in the workplace?
Yeah, so intersectionality is the issue that biases based on different aspects of a person's identity do not operate independently, right? They intersect, and therefore that naturally compounds the impact of each of those. So intersecting and overlapping identities can compound our vulnerabilities, and therefore they have an oppressive effect, or they can also empower us by creating potential strengths. So if it's the former, then this can obviously lead to discrimination, marginalization, and oppression. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's empowering intersectional identities, they can help us to be more resilient and productive members of our communities. So if I were to take my own case, for instance, in terms of the intersectional identity labels that would apply to me. So some of these could be Gen X, heterosexual woman of color, with mixed Asian and Western education and work experience. Now, this can have both a positive and a negative impact, compounded effect in different contexts. And that's where intersectionality becomes interesting.
Very well said. And Vinika, given the amount of work you've done with so many organizations, what are some actionable steps companies can take to create a more inclusive culture? And I remember asking this from a very senior corporate leader, saying, what is your DEI policy? And they said, well, we've got a policy. I said, where does the accountability lie? He says, well, I've told the HR leader to do it. So I wanted to get your perspective. What can companies do to create a more inclusive culture?
So again, there's a lot of literature out there, lots of things that, if you just Google on the internet, you'll find lots of people saying different things in terms of actionable steps. So I think what I'd like to do is to highlight one specific DEI practice that all individuals and organizations can adopt and which, I've seen working effectively. And this is the concept of allyship. Based on my own experience of working with organizations and the individuals that I advise, this is an actionable and impactful step that I would recommend. So what is allyship? The dictionary definition is active support for the rights of a minority or marginalized group by someone who is not themselves a part of that group, but feels strongly and therefore, wishes to advocate for that group. So, for instance, I work closely with the United Nations He for She Alliance, which, as you know, works on one important aspect of allyship, specifically male allyship for women. And we were in Paris just last October as part of an advisory panel, which is helping to shape their vision for how this, the He for She Alliance will work for the next decade in the light of how the DEI climate has evolved. And there were some very interesting learnings there on how allyship is working in different contexts. In fact, I work closely with the members of the UK police, and I found some really inspiring examples of how they make it happen. My own research in the area of allyship might also be some findings that your listeners can find useful. So this was research that we had conducted on how active sponsorship and advocacy by male bosses can exert a positive influence on the motivation of mid-career female followers to sort of actively pursue career progress. Now, so we explored this for the finance and tech industries in Asia Pacific. And very interestingly, our findings showcased a mechanism by which this male allyship can have a positive impact on what is called the regulatory focus of people's behavior patterns. And we saw it moving them towards what is called a greater promotion focus. So it encourages the adoption of what are called eager strategies, meaning, taking risks, putting your hand up, doing what it takes towards the achievement of career goals, as opposed to a more risk averse, let me stay where I am and be comfortable in this zone kind of an approach. Now, that's a big project. It'll take a long time to tell you more about it. But I think just to give you a sense of why I think allyship is such a crucial activity that I think leaders can focus on.
Fascinating. Thank you. My next question to you, Vinika, is how can technology be leveraged to advance DEI initiatives?
Yeah, so this is the question that comes up a lot, as with everything related to technology. And, it can have both a positive and a negative impact. So let's take some examples of positive impact, which we've seen unfolding. So on the positive side, the idea of digital inclusion. So we've seen organizations use technologies like virtual reality, perhaps, for virtual training that addresses the needs of digital accessibility and offers a more fair distribution of resources. As a business school ourselves, we are seeing this play out, and you know, we are definitely taking advantage of it to make sure that digital inclusion is practiced by us. It's the idea of enabling accessibility. So we do see workplaces are becoming more accessible through technological means. We've seen, you know, text to speech on the web, for instance. And a very interesting example, one of my own batchmates from, IIM Bangalore, Pramit, has now developed the most amazing technology. It's a very simple app, which allows people who cannot see very well to use their phones as seamlessly as you or I could do. This particular app is called Louie, and I think it's really amazing. So again, you know, increasing that enabling accessibility. And finally, assistive technologies. You know, you have more assistive technologies like, say, automatic wheelchairs, hearing aids, etc., which do then again improve the diversity and inclusion aspect of it. But yes, I do have to say that there have been negative consequences also. Yeah. You've heard about the negative impact on hiring and recruitment policies when algorithms come into play, because the data that they're using is already unfortunately skewed in one direction. So as long as we use technology with care and with the awareness that, you know, there will be positive and negative ramifications, then I think it's very positive in the whole part.
Well said. Well said. So I've time for two more questions for you. My next question is, given the amount of work that you've done in the area of DEI, what is your message to leaders who are still skeptical about the business value of diversity, equity, and inclusion?
I always say skepticism is good. It keeps us honest. It forces us to check what we are doing.
Yes.
Right. And it makes sure that we make changes where they're required, because I mean, constant change has to be a part of everything that we do. And certainly in the world of academia, of education, we're constantly testing what past research has shown us to see whether it still applies and to make modifications where required. So when I teach DEI, for instance, I always cover both the theory and the latest research that we have coming out of, you know, reputed schools, and then also invite corporate practitioners in to come in and comment on what they actually see working in practice.
Very interesting. And my last question to you, Venika, what advice would you give to young professionals who want to champion DEI in their organizations?
So, well, my response to young professionals would be very clear. If not you, then who? It is your future that we are shaping, so you do have to step up. And again, we've got research at INSEAD, and I'm sure there's more outside, which shows that people's expectations of what they want from their business leaders today have evolved. It's about much more than doing business.
Right.
They do expect leaders to have a voice, to have a view, and to play a part in social issues. So you need to use that voice impactfully and carefully. Perhaps use the principles of allyship that I mentioned earlier. Listen carefully, engage actively, and work with the people that you're seeking to support, because we need all hands on deck.
Well said. And on that note, and your very powerful message, if not you, then who? And it's not just for young people, but I think across, this phrase applies to every single individual who is working anywhere. It's so important to have complete inclusiveness of 50% of the population. Thank you, Venika, for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for speaking to me about so many different aspects of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I think I learned many new things from you today on how you are taking a lead as a person from the world of academia in this space. And I'm sure I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go keep on following what you are doing in this area. I will certainly do that. Thank you for giving me so many new different perspectives and for speaking to me. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. Platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.